Tune to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. So nice to have you with us. By the way, I hope you all had a good 4th of July as well. 250 years and still going strong here in the United States. Which brings me to tonight's show. My guest this week is author Mark Farrington. Mark, for many years, was an instructor and taught writing at such premier institutions such as Johns Hopkins University. As you know me, I love to have local folks on. Mark was born and raised in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, so a local native as well. So for the next half hour, we'll be talking with Mark about his new book, Loss of Life. And what goes into it? I'm always intrigued, and I know many of you love to read as well. And we sometimes wish that we could write as well as read. And for the next half hour in discussing loss of life, we'll be talking with Mark about the creative nature of writing, what it does for the author, and what the author hopes it will do to you, the reader. So stay with us for the next half hour. Mark Farrington, welcome.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
Mark, I say in the introduction, I said, wanted to get a sense of what it's like to be a writer. I mean, many people say, well, I write letters, I write Christmas cards. Not quite the same thing. Loss of Life, and I'll let you describe it. It is a work of fiction, but I always say, well, what turns what may be a work of fiction certainly had to have, there had to be a thought in your mind, there had to be an idea in your mind, maybe based on a true life experience that you put between the pages of the book. And yeah, labeled as fiction, but may indeed have been part of your life. Was that the case with Loss of Life?
Yes, in the sense that there are many little details in the book that either I experienced myself or have thought about, and there are certainly things that I was thinking about that led me into writing the book. In the novel opens with the main character, who's 41-year-old Matthew Winton, waking up in a hospital after a car accident, and he learns that he has lost his memory of the last 27 years of his life. He can remember his childhood, but nothing beyond about the age of 13. And I have long been interested in memory and the value of memory, the importance of memory. My wife and I don't have any children, and I've never been big on material things. So for me, my memory is sort of the greatest proof I have that I've been alive. You know, I can remember the things I've done, the people I've known, and all that, and that for me is my life, and that's how the title came about as well. The idea of loss of life. It's not a death necessarily that the book deals with, but the sense that for this character, what he remembers of his life is his life, and he has lost that, and that sort of sets the book in motion. There was an incident that I read about back in 2013 in the Washington Post Sunday magazine, ran a story about a 30-year-old woman who woke up one morning and couldn't remember the last 17 years of her life. And for the longest time, the doctors didn't know what had happened or how this had happened to her. But she didn't recognize her husband. She didn't recognize her 19-month-old daughter. And that was an article that it really struck me in an important way at the time, but I was involved with other things, so I put it away. And then a few years ago, I came back to it, and I was thinking about it more. And as I get older, I find that there's a word that I get to that I'm talking, and I can't remember that word, or I see an old actor on TV, and I can't remember their name. So that whole idea of what would it be like to lose your memory is something that started with me, in my own experience. But I then wanted to wanted to explore it through this particular character, who's a made-up character.
And that character being Matthew Winton. And again, going back to it, with what you just said, you put him, you created, you know, obviously Matthew Winton as the main character in the book. But I know you make mention of Winton drives through the Berkshires. So going back to what you had initially said, that I take it that much of this character, much of the development of loss of life, again, goes back to the fact that, you know, as you said, thank God we both have at least most of our memory. But, you know, going back to those early days, you know, the parts of, you know, the Berkshires, the western part of Massachusetts where you were born and raised. So it had to be very, you know, each moment must have been very poignant for you personally, because, you know, you're recalling moments in your own life as you were putting the words to the pages. Does that seem to make sense?
Yeah, and I think probably the setting is one of the things that is closest to my own experience. When the book opens, he lives in Northern Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C., and he teaches writing at a university. And, of course, that's pretty much what I did for about 25 years. And then he did grow up in western Massachusetts in the Berkshires. And so about the middle of the book, he decides that he's going to go back there. And he thinks of it as he's going back to look for ghosts, because he's trying to uncover what his life was like and who he was. So the second half of the book takes place in the Berkshires. And although the names of the towns are fictional, they're based on the actual locations, are based on some of the towns that that I lived in or spent a lot of time driving through back when I was growing up. And later I lived in the Berkshires till I was in my early 30s. So it was more than just my childhood there that influenced me.
Yeah. I just want to take a quick pause to remind our listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. This is The Public Eye. I'm Al Boney, your host. My guest this week is author Mark Farrington. His new book is Loss of Life, and this is a work of fiction, but much of what Mark has been talking about has to do with personal experiences, for one, which helped enable him to, you know, put the story together. And more importantly, really does, Mark, it does hit a note here, because as you mentioned earlier, you know, now I forget, you know, I'm watching a television show or I'm reading something in a book or hearing a conversation and you go, oh, yeah, what's that person's name? Oh, where? Yeah, I remember being there. Oh, I can't remember the name of that town or that restaurant, whatever it may be. And you're grappling with it. You in your mind visually remember that episode or you know that experience, but putting it out there, it really is frustrating. I find it frustrating at this stage of my life. So I'm glad in many ways reading the book. I said, geez, that I do that often. I feel that way often, and I gotta believe that makes a connection with readers. Would you agree?
I think so, yes, and you know, particularly these days, there's so much more knowledge that we have about you know, aging and what can happen to our brains as we get older. So that even small things that we forget, that we might laugh about or just get a little frustrated about, it's hard not to stop and think, well, what if that increases? What if that gets worse? And what if I start forgetting more and more, particularly as you know, as we get older, and I'm up in years there, so that's something that's you know that's more and more is a concern for me. I also wanted to have some fun with it though, and he's got to navigate this world that's a totally new world for him. With all he can remember is basically up through the first 13 years of his life. So at one point he goes to the grocery and he starts picking things off the shelves that he remembers liking. And he gets to the checkout, and his basket is full of things like ice cream and hot dogs, because these are the things he remembers liking when he was 13. And he doesn't have any connection to beyond that. I think, you know, talking about sort of how it connects to my life is an interesting way to look at it, because this is one of the things that I wanted to explore in the book. Matthew Wynn is a writing professor at a university, and he finds that he has published a couple of short stories, and he finds those stories, and there actually are two stories in the book that are presented as stories that he wrote and published. And they're fictional stories, and he reads them, and he's trying to figure out in these fictional stories what clues there might be as to what his real life is like. And that was one of the things that interested me in going about writing the book, is the relationship between fiction and fact, and the question of, you know, I believe that fiction has its own truth, but it's a different kind of truth than a factual writing has. And so looking for some kind of a truth in fiction is one of the things I was playing with for a while in the book. And I included the two stories because I want the reader to sort of think about that as well, and to sort of go through that experience where you look at this story that you have written with these characters who have made up doing things, and you have no idea whether those things they are doing are made up or if they are things that you are taking from your own life. And so that idea, and I have joked sometimes that with some of my memories, I'm not sure if something I remember is something that actually happened to me, or if it's something that I wrote a story about happening to some fictional character. So that was one of the things that I was really interested in playing with here. And I think the other thing is a former student of mine had read it recently, and he asked me, is this autobiography? And I thought about that, and of course it isn't, but it was a great compliment in a way, because what he was saying was, it feels like it could be real, or it feels so real that I believe it actually happened. And I think that's one of the greatest compliments you can give to a fiction writer, is to tell them that this story that they have made up in their imagination feels like it actually happened or may have happened. This is not autobiography, although, I'm clearly in it. And that, again, that's one of the things that that Matthew plays with as well, is trying to figure out where is he in the writing that he's done.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly comes through clear. And I can't even, Mark, I can't even imagine an author, whether they are writing fiction or nonfiction, not having numerous episodes where they stop for a moment, while writing, while putting together thoughts and ideas, and thinking, I did that, or I've been there, or just your own feelings, your own emotions. In fact, I want to read a quote from someone who read the book. And this is what they wrote about loss of life. It offers a fresh narrative about how the act of writing can both unearth the painful stories that define us, in other words, who we are, and offer an opportunity for healing, redemption, and renewal. And I know we kind of touched upon it at the opening of the segment, but I always get the feeling, as you said, this character, spending time in Western Massachusetts, where you were raised, is a writer, teaching writing, which you do. So I do believe that even in fiction, and I'll let you clarify that authors have some portrayal of their own life, some segment within each character or each chapter of their own life. I mean, otherwise you're just taking stuff. And I'm not saying that doesn't happen. I think there are those people out there who can just grasp at anything and develop a story. And I think that's a talent and an art, within itself. But again, going back to loss of life, things that you've been thinking about, things that cross your mind. And you're exactly right. I want to remember all the people that came through my life, but it's impossible at times. I want to remember what was fourth grade or fifth grade like. I don't know. I know I got, I didn't get the best marks and I got scolded a lot. Other than that, but again, in this book, Loss of Life, I think that really summed it up well. But I want to get your sense that it does unlock for many people similar thoughts that you and I are talking about right now, right?
Yeah, I think so. And I teach my students that for me, I think of characters as kind of like a Mr. Potato Head, where as a fiction writer, you're a great thief and you can steal anything from the world around you, from your own experience. But then once you do take it in, it transforms itself into something that is fictional. And so, for instance, I could say, well, the mother in this book is based on my real mother. But once I accept that and I sort of bring her into my imagination, she becomes someone who is quite different than the real mother that I had. And I think that's really important for a fiction writer, because it gives you that freedom at the same time as it connects you to some things that are real and details that are believable. There are a few little episodes that I included in the book that did actually come specifically from my life. For example, my mother, I perceived my mother as being very unhappy when I was a child, and so what I would do when something happened that where it made her particularly upset is I would write her a letter apologizing for everything I had done that caused her to be upset, even when I had done nothing, I made something up, and then I would leave it on her pillow in her bedrooms at night so she would find it. And that's something that Matthew remembers having done as well. So those little details, little experiences, they work their way in sometimes, and it is that connection between what actually happened and also what you are imagining or what might have happened to the fictional people who are there. It's an interesting conglomeration, and I can't say I've figured it out, but it's not quite totally fiction, but it's also not nonfiction. Somewhere in between.
Yeah, and I hearing you talk about those little notes you left, those are the things that I think grab a reader's attention, those subtle nuances that you added in there. Those are things that, now I'm not saying that everybody thought back about, mom or dad was mad at me, or they didn't seem happy that day or that week. They were having a tough time, as we all do in life. And that was sort of the pick-me-up note, I'm sorry, but very endearing. And I can't imagine any reader picking up the book, reading through that particular segment, and not thinking, stopping and thinking, oh, geez, that I remember doing things like that, or I remember mom or dad or a family member that I was very close to, and wanting to do more, wanting a way to reach out. So whether they did it or not, the fact is that you've made a connection, which and I always say, I'm going to use the word heartfelt. I truly believe that when a reader gets done reading something, I'm not saying that every author goes in this intentionally, but I always believe that at the end, if you come away with something, and it doesn't always have to be necessarily heart-wrenching or heartfelt, but if you can come away with something, then you as an author did your job, and the reader on the other end received an enjoyment or a pleasurable moment reading that, that they would not have had the opportunity to. So it's, to me, writing and reading is a win-win situation, right?
Yeah, that's kind of where I ended up while writing this book was I talked about the question of where is the truth in fiction, and what I ended up concluding is that there is a felt reality in fiction that you can share with readers, regardless of whether they have had the exact same experience as the characters. Mm-hmm. If you can get at those experiences in a deep and honest enough way, readers will connect to that and it will resonate with them. And I think that's why, you know, that's why we can read a novel that's set in, you know, 1727 Moscow and feel like, yeah, we're connecting to those characters. That there is that sort of truth. I remember when I was in, I think I was in like seventh or eighth grade, and my English teacher announced that, in her opinion, there were only 7 plots in all of fiction. And in a way, I began to think that, yeah, there are in a broad way. But what really is there is that there's a limited number of emotions that humans have. And every person pretty much has experienced all of them. And so if you can connect into those emotions, you can connect with readers. Now, the degree of the emotion is going to vary, obviously, that, you know, somebody who has lost their car keys is going to feel the sense of loss, but in a much more superficial way than, say, someone who has lost their child. Mm. But the emotion is the same. And so you can connect at some level to those emotions. And if you can find that in your characters, then I think that readers will feel it also. And that's sort of, that's what I was after in writing this book.
And I think I think you've achieved that. You know, reading that book, reading Loss of Life, and as you said, we've all had those moments of loss, forgetfulness, wanting to recall a particular moment in our life. But more importantly, and I'm glad that you clarified it, is that, and I'm not saying that every single author and every single book, sometimes things are just fact-based, things that you need to memorize in order to understand a concept. That's a whole different world. But when an author sits down and uses, you know, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, uses their own personal experiences or from memory of an experience, adds that to the mix, then it creates, as you said, a connection. And I can't imagine, you know, if we had 12 authors sitting in a circle, yourself included, in a little, you know, little get together. And I'd said, you know, obviously you all wrote this with the hope of making a connection with the reader. I can't imagine any one of them saying, oh, God, no, I couldn't care less. I just wanted to get the book out there, sell 500,000 copies and retire. I mean, for some, I suppose that's the case, but I think that those are the one percenters. I think putting heart and soul, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, into a book defines who you are as an author, right?
I think so. It certainly, I feel that that's true for me, there are many writers who are much more clever than I am when it comes to playing with words and things like that. But, the thing that matters the most to me as a writer is getting sort of at the emotional truth of what's happening in the book, and who these characters are and how they're living their lives and what matters to them and what they're trying to do. I think the whole idea of taking away 27 years of his life with amnesia was something that, to be honest, I worried about at first because, I mean, where do we find amnesia as a big plot device? Well, it's in a lot of soap operas pretty much, and I certainly didn't want that that connection here.
Right.
There's even a point where he mentioned this, you know, that he's a little bit offended that he's dealing with amnesia because it's such a popular trope in soap operas.
Yeah.
It was a vehicle for me. The book is not about amnesia so much, but it was a vehicle for me to force this character to take an honest and in-depth look at his own life. He's a character who has fooled himself in a lot of ways in terms of how he has spun what has happened to him in his life, what he has done, and things that were done to him,
right,
as a way of survival. And I wanted him to sort of have a reckoning with those things and to look at them in a more honest and deep way than he ever had before. And so to get him to do that, he wasn't going to do that on his own. You know,
right.
He hadn't done it for 41 years. So to get him to do that, I took his life away, and that made him go back and look for it and deal with what he discovered, as opposed to deal with what he had fabricated for himself.
And and I don't mean to cut you off, but we are coming down to running out of time. But it does. You're exactly right. The way the book was structured, the way you had Witten's life played out in the book, Matthew Witten's life playing out in the book, certainly resonates. And you know, making that connection, identifying, I think, as the word I would use, you can find some of yourself at the end of the book in Matthew Witten's life in some way. Mark, real quickly before we close out, I know the book is widely available. Loss of Life is widely available. But if people want to just get more, know more about, your background and the work that you've done over the years, is there a website? Is there a way that they can reach out to you directly if they wish to do so?
Yes, my website is markfarrington.net. And I've got a little bit about the book on there. I've got a couple of my short stories there. And I've also started posting some of the fiction lessons that I have taught to my students at Johns Hopkins over the years. From COVID on, I ended up being an online teacher after being in classrooms for 25 years. And so a lot of my materials have all been written up. So I've started to post some of those. There's also a way for people on my website to contact me or to sign up for any notifications of new material being added. So that's markfarrington.net. The publisher of the book is Legacy Book Press, and I was very happy with the work that they did in creating the book. It's a good book for me. I mean, it feels good to hold the book in my hands.
Oh, I bet it is. I bet it is. Yeah. And I have to say that many of the small independent publishers are indeed the ones who highlight, the ones who will take on a project, especially of a new author, and otherwise we would never, you know, much of the talent that we see out there in the book market may never have, been in the market if it weren't for many of the small publishers. Kudos to them as well. But again, I want to thank my guest this week, author Mark Farrington. His new book is Loss of Life, a really terrific read, one that I know will resonate with each and every one of you. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios of WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. And of course, you can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for being part of our evening. Thank you. Thank you.